rags and feathers. Tell me where is sanity? Tax the rich, feed the poor. Tell their
somewhere out there. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, about 20,000 years ago, humans trekked along the margins of a shallow lake in Australia, leaving behind records of their passage in the soft, wet sand. In 2003, an Aboriginal woman, who is likely a descendant of those early Australians, stumbled across dozens of time-worn footprints in the area. Excavations of the site have since uncovered hundreds more. The discovery, detailed in a recent issue of the Journal of Human Evolution, represents the largest collection of that era of human footprints in the world, and the only footprints from that era ever found in Australia. In total, 457 footprints have now been uncovered. That period stretched from about 2 million to 12,000 years ago. Man, there's so many things going on this planet we just don't know about. I'll tell you one person, though, who knows a lot about what happened millions of years ago, Michael Cremo, and he's our guest next on Coast to Coast AM. Michael Cremo is a member of the History of Science Society, the World Archaeological Congress, the Philosophy of Science Association, and the European Association of Archaeologists. After receiving a scholarship to study international affairs at George Washington University, Michael began to study the ancient histories of India, known as the Vedas. In this way, he has broadened his academic knowledge with a spirituality from the Eastern tradition. Michael is on the cutting edge of science and cultural issues, and in the course of a few months' time, he might be found on pilgrimage to sacred sites in India, appearing on a national radio or television show in the United States or any other country, lecturing at a mainstream science conference, or speaking to an alternative science gathering. As he crosses disciplinary and cultural boundaries, he presents to the audiences a compelling case for negotiating a new consensus on the nature of reality. Our guest tonight, Michael Cremo. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing really great, George. Good to be with you and your audience again.
Always a pleasure. And, you know, wherever I go, somewhere in the conversation, somebody mentions your name. It's absolutely uncanny. I mean, we may be talking about where we visited millions of years ago by extraterrestrials. How old might civilizations be? Everybody always mentions your name.
Well, you know, that's really gratifying. I'm happy to hear the words getting around like that. I sort of find it very interesting that such a great variety of groups of people invite me to come and speak to them. I mean, as you know, my main work has been in archaeological evidence for extreme human antiquity, but UFO organizations invite me to speak, paranormal organizations, theosophical organizations, yoga societies. Seems everyone's interested in this phenomenon of knowledge filtration, whereby a lot of the facts that we need to really get a good picture of who we are and where we came from are just out of view.
I remember talking to you back when I was doing my local show in St. Louis out of KTRS, and I was just hooked when we talked about forbidden archaeology. I mean, I just, the things we talked about, and we're going to go through some of that again because it is just so fascinating, some of the discoveries from millions of years ago. It is mind-boggling. I'm at a point, Michael, and I guess you are too, that this planet is much older in terms of human life than we really realize. And I think they were pretty technologically advanced, don't you?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, if you look at practically any of the writings of the ancient civilizations, the ancient Sanskrit writings of India are the ones that I'm most familiar with, but they speak of spaceships, of weapons resembling our modern weapons. They had apparently the ability to look inside the human embryo and see what was going on. So it appears, yes, ancient peoples did have quite a bit of knowledge that perhaps, some of it perhaps, that we're rediscovering.
I think something very horrible happened on this planet, Michael, a long time ago. I don't know what it was, but something happened.
Well, I think there have been a series of catastrophes that have taken place in the history of life on Earth. If you go back to the time of Plato and Aristotle, the Greek philosophers, they said that. You know, time goes in cycles. There have been periodic devastations after which civilizations have risen again and again and again. So I think we're in one of those cycles now, and I think we're in the downside of the cycle.
Yeah, I think so too. Do you think when these devastations occur, they wipe out civilizations entirely, or might there have been a few human beings left, maybe the type where people would say it's Adam and Eve, for example, because there weren't too many people left?
Well, it appears that the world has been repopulated many times. Now, perhaps there are refuges where populations exist. For example, in the ancient Sanskrit writings, it says that even now there are psychic refuges within the Himalayan mountains, deep within the Himalayan mountains, where there are people waiting to repopulate the earth after the next devastation. So it could be something like that. I think we also have to consider the fact that you have to take a wider view and look at the whole universe and not just our Earth planet. There may be human-like people living on other planets that could be a source of, you know, repopulation of the Earth after these events as well. So, but I think it's very, very interesting. When I looked, you know, at the standard paleontological history of the world, you know, if you go back to the very beginning of the history of life on Earth up to the present, they say there have been six major extinction events that have taken place, the most recent one having been the one that extinguished the dinosaurs. When I looked at the ancient Sanskrit writings, I found something pretty interesting. It said that, you know, time goes in vast cycles. One of the cycles is called Manvantars, and they last about 300 million years each. According to the ancient Sanskrit calendars, we're now in the seventh of these periods, which means there have been six before, and they tell us that between each one of them, there has been a devastation after which the Earth has had to have been repopulated. So it's a pretty amazing coincidence that both according to modern paleontology and to the information that we can get from these ancient wisdom sources, there have been six major devastations that have taken place in the history of life on Earth thus far.
What do you think happened to them, Michael, in terms of, and we'll get into what might have occurred in terms of devastation, but also in terms of the archaeological find? I mean, we find some old bones, and we find, you know, the Valley of the Kings and things like that, but in terms of structures and buildings, there's really nothing from millions of years ago. I mean, do you believe, for example, if, and let's use Los Angeles for a moment, if a million years went by and nothing was built other than what we already have here, would it all be gone? Would it disintegrate to just dust where people wouldn't even see it anymore?
I think a lot of it would disintegrate into dust over the course of years. I mean, there were huge battles that took place in Europe during World War II, and you can go back to those places now. I mean, there should be, you know, just tons of equipment and stuff lying around, but it's not there. You can hardly find a thing. So I think over millions of years, there can be a lot of destruction. Of course, there are some cases, you know, that I've talked about in Forbidden Archaeology where you do have apparently some structures from very, very ancient times remaining. There was the case of a case in Oklahoma at Heavener where you had some coal miners going down 2 miles beneath the surface of the earth, and they were blasting out what they call rooms in the mine.
Yeah.
You know, they used dynamite to blast out a chamber, and then they clear the coal out. So these miners reported that they had blasted out a chamber, you know, deep within the earth in this coal mine, and they'd found at the opposite end of the chamber, as they were clearing away the coal, they found a wall. And this wall, according to the report, was made of 6-inch polished blocks of stone, and they were so polished you could see reflection in them.
2 miles in.
And you know, like coal at that depth, that's about 300 million years old. That's from the Carboniferous period. Yeah, so you're talking about something very, very ancient.
And would that have been on the surface at that time?
Yes, because the coal is made from plants, which grow on the surface.
Right.
So at one point, it would have had to have been, at that level, it would have had to have been from the surface somehow, and it got buried, which happens. I mean, you can go to the Grand Canyon, you can see deposits laid one after another, you know, going a mile straight down. So it's not that there's no evidence at all of ancient structures, although it's very, very rare. I think one thing we have to keep in mind is that the archaeological record, the geological record, is incomplete. Geologists tell us that of all the sedimentary layers that have ever been laid down, because that's where you're going to find these fossils, in the sedimentary layers that have been laid down, layers of sandstone and silt and all kinds of rocks like that. That's where you're going to find these remains. The geologists tell us that of all the deposits that have ever been laid down on Earth, 90% or more are gone, and they've been worn away by erosion and other, you know, geological processes. So, and then we've only looked at a tiny bit of it, and those who are doing the looking, they have all their different theoretical preconceptions that result in this knowledge filtering that I'm talking about. So it's as if, like, we were trying to understand, say if you have a book, you know, written in a foreign language, a 1,000-page book, and you've only got 50 pages left, and you rip them up and put them into a box, and you pull out a few pieces and look at them, you know, how much can you really tell about what the whole book was really about? You can learn something. You can definitely learn something. I think it's the same with this archaeological evidence. I don't think we're ever going to be able to get the complete story of the history of human life on Earth, you know, by that method, because a lot of it's simply gone. Fortunately, I think there are other ways to get at the truth. There are the records left by some of these ancient civilizations which contain information. But some people don't put a lot of trust in that. They want to see the stones and the bones and the artifacts. There are artifacts. There are human skeletons. There are human footprints that go back many, many millions of years. And as incomplete and imperfect as this evidence may be, it's enough to tell us that the current theories are wrong and that humans have been on this planet for vast, vast periods of time.
Can you have high technology and still, let's say, have the fundamental archaeological living style of stone houses? And I'm thinking of Star Wars, for example, where they had spaceships and incredible communications. Yet when you look at how they lived in, you know, stone homes and things like that, things that today we would think might be the Dark Ages. In a movie like Star Wars, they were perfectly fine living like that, but they still had high technology. Is it possible we had that kind of living environment back millions of years ago?
Yes, I think it is, and that's, I would say, in the ancient Sanskrit writings we find descriptions of exactly that. Another thing I think we have to keep in mind is that in the past, you know, people may have been making use of technologies that involve more subtle elements and more subtle energies than we're accustomed to now. I think we're dealing with matter at its grossest level, basically. And I think in past civilizations, they may have been able to deal with things on a more subtle level. They may have had spaceships that they didn't build in factories, but that they manufactured in some other way.
Right.
So, and I think a lot of, I mean, this takes us into, you know, what might be called the paranormal and, you know, things of that sort. And I think a lot of our technology today is simply an attempt by us to recreate faculties and abilities that people had naturally in very distant times. For example, I think our computers and television and radio just may be our way of trying to reproduce through technology abilities, telepathic abilities that people normally had in more ancient times.
They had something because, you know, we're not really stumbling across the ancient electrical grid system, for example. I can't find that. Nobody
can. We have to think like, well, what would that sort of thing look like after 10 or 20 million years?
Right,
like,
exactly.
Hey, what if people had laptop computers, 10 million years ago? Well, then you have to think, well, what's a laptop computer going to look like after, 10 million years? It's not going to look like the one that's sitting on my desk right now.
No, it won't.
You know,
that's
it's going to be, the plastics are going to be melted. Most of the metals will corrode except gold. And, that's one of the reasons that gold is so valuable. It doesn't corrode. It doesn't oxidize like most metals do. I think that may be one reason why some of the more ancient artifacts that have been found have been made of gold. There was the case that was reported in 1892 in the Morrisonville Times of the state of Illinois here in the United States, where a woman was putting a big piece of coal into a coal-burning stove, and the piece of coal broke in half, and inside she found a gold chain.
Inside a piece of coal that was millions of years old.
Right, and from the report, we were able to tell, it mentioned the mine that the coal came from. So by doing a little research in the geological reports about the mine, we could see that the coal in that particular location was about 300 million years old.
300 million.
And then there was an entirely separate case, which was mentioned in a scientific journal called The Geologist, published in the year 1862, that told of a human skeleton that was found 90 feet below the surface of the ground in Macoupin County, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
the same state that this gold chain was found in. And it was there were medical doctors present who examined the bones. They said they were those of a human being, but they were found 90 feet below the surface of the ground, and directly above the layer where the skeleton was found was a thick layer of slate rock that extended for hundreds of yards in all directions. It was about 4 or 5 feet thick. It was unbroken. Because that's one of the excuses that sometimes people give. Skeptics will say, well, the skeleton had to have come down from some higher level. It really didn't belong in the layer
right.
that it was found. It slipped down through a fissure or something. But in this case, you've got a solid layer of rock, going for hundreds of meters, hundreds of yards in all directions above the skeleton. So there wasn't any, and it was unbroken. So that means that skeleton really did belong in the layer in which it was found. In this case, about 300 million years or so.
It is amazing, Michael. It really is. Hey, when we come back, let's talk about what you think happened to these civilizations, and then we'll get into Devolution, which is one of your new works. He's also, of course, a very prolific author of a book called Forbidden Archaeology, which was the first book that gave me my exposure to Michael Cremo and his theories, and they really are something. And both of them still available, Michael?
Yes, they are. They're both still out there circulating on the internet book sites like Amazon, on my own personal website. So they're still available, yes.
All right, very good. We'll stick with us. Michael Cremo's our special guest tonight. If you need to email me, that's very simple. It's george@coasttocoastam.com. And as Michael said, he's got his main website, which is mcremo, C-R-E-M-O.com. But there are other two related websites that are linked up right now to his name at coasttocoastam.com. We make it very user-friendly for you to get to their websites, and Lex has them posted for at least several days. And then when you go into past guests on the navigation bar, their websites stay there on the website until the end of time. So as long as they have their website, you can get to it. I'll be back in a moment with Michael Cremo on Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, first hour, we are going to be talking with a medical doctor and his patient, and they both claim that she is the reincarnated Marilyn Monroe. Lex had a feature story on it yesterday on the coasttocoastam.com website. So we'll talk with them tomorrow in our first hour, and then those special Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. Well, we're back at you with our guest, Michael Cremo. Michael, do you believe these civilizations, the past civilizations, the six major ones that have come and gone, what caused them to disappear? Was it earth changes, man-made disasters? What kind of calamities? All of the above?
Earth changes, basically. Time goes in cycles. Just like every year, we have like a cycle of in the temperate countries at least, of spring, summer, fall, and then winter, and then it starts over again. So these cycles go like that. And within the larger cycles that I talked about, there are sub-cycles. And this is something that practically every wisdom tradition in the world has understood. You know, the Greek philosophers, Plato, Aristotle, the Romans, they had a cycle of ages, of four ages, a golden age that's followed by a silver age, followed by a bronze age, followed by an iron age, mm-hmm. after which there's destruction, and then the thing starts all over again. The ancient Sanskrit writings describe a similar cycle, that there's a cycle of ages, which they call yugas. There's a Satya Yuga, a golden age in which most people are very peaceful and spiritual and very healthy and long-lived, and they have very, very advanced abilities, although a very, very simple level of culture.
That's the lifestyle I want again.
Right. Then in the next age, things become a little bit degraded, because the people start developing a little bit of selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
So then they start dividing into classes, and you get a social structure that emerges, and towns and villages and cities begin to emerge. And then in the next stage, it gets a little bit more complicated. And finally, in the fourth age, which we're in now, it's called the Kali Yuga. It's called an age of quarrel and hypocrisy, which was a pretty good prediction, because this was predicted. This current age that we're in, it was predicted thousands of years ago in these ancient Sanskrit writings, and the predictions are all coming true.
What caused this horrible, as you would say, devolution to occur? How do we start off so spiritual, so advanced, and then trail down? You would think we'd go the other way.
One good thing is that it'll start up again, from that point.
From the high point.
But I think it's natural when you consider, okay, you give people some advantages, and those who are smart will take advantage of them in the proper way, and others are going to misuse it. Those who are taking advantage of it properly, they'll get out of the system, because this is another whole aspect of this devolution process, that originally we don't belong in this world. We belong on some other higher level of reality that's beyond all these cycles. It's only some of us that drift down to this level, and then we get caught up in these cycles, and then we have to remain in them. You were mentioning on your next show, you're going to be talking about reincarnation.
Right.
So that's something. So those who take advantage of the process when it's good, in those good times, if they take advantage of the opportunity, they can, through contemplation, yoga, mystic processes, prayer, whatever, they can get out of the whole cycle. If they don't, then all right, then you're there for the next act of the show, where you still have a chance to get out, but it's going to be a little bit harder. So I think we see this all the time. People are given a chance and say, take advantage of the chance now, because later, say to buy something, because if you don't buy it now, it's going to cost you more later. Maybe some people will buy the object then and take advantage of it, and those that don't, well, they'll have to endure the higher prices later on.
The biblical flood, was that one of these major earth changes that wiped out the civilizations?
I think we see this idea of natural catastrophes, periodic natural catastrophes, mentioned in practically all wisdom traditions in one form or another. I think in the different traditions, they may be described in slightly different ways, but I think it's obvious if we look at the history of the world. You look at the Mayan calendar, for example, which people are talking about now. It talks about periodic catastrophes. The ancient Sanskrit writings talk about these periodic catastrophes. The Bible mentions one, but I believe that there were many before that. So I think we see the same thing reflected in a lot of different wisdom traditions and ancient sources of knowledge.
Michael, devolution, give me your full definition of that, because that was kind of a reversal on what so many people have been thinking.
Well, yes. You know, in this earlier book, you know, Forbidden Archaeology, what I did is I presented a lot of evidence, a lot of archaeological evidence in the form of human skeletons, human artifacts, and human footprints going back tens of millions, even hundreds of millions of years. It contradicts, you know, the current theory of human origins, which says, you know, that human beings like us evolved, you know, from some more primitive ape-like ancestors, and that humans like us came into existence only about 100,000 years ago or so. So you've got all this evidence that contradicts the current theory. So scientists and the general public ask me, well, if you're saying we didn't evolve from, you know, the apes and ape men, and then where did we come from? So the book Human Devolution is my answer, you know, to that question, and it's you know, based on my studies in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India. But to put it very, very simply, we didn't evolve up from matter. We devolved or came down from a level of pure consciousness or spirit. And actually what I'm proposing is, I mean, before we even ask the question, where did human beings come from, we should first of all ask the question, what is a human being?
Exactly, and why?
Yeah, because today, you know, a lot of scientists are going to say, well, you're just a bunch of chemicals. That's what you are. You're just a product of random evolution. You're just another kind of animal. You're an evolved ape. You're a bunch of chemicals. That's what you are. However, I think if we actually look at all of the evidence that comes to us from various fields of human experience and scientific investigation, we're going to see it's more reasonable to say that a human being is not just a combination of matter. We're a combination of three things. Matter, yes, that's part of what a human being is, but beyond that, there is a subtle mind element, and then beyond that, there is the element of consciousness or spirit, if you like that word. And when I call these things mind and consciousness elements, I mean real elements, just like gold is an element, silver is an element. I'm not talking about just temporary, you know, bioelectrical activity in the brain. I'm talking about them as real substances. And then once we've established that, and there's a lot of evidence that we could talk about that establishes the existence of a subtle mind element that can act in very unusual ways. That takes us into the area of a lot of paranormal research. There's also a lot of scientific evidence that shows there's a conscious self that can exist apart from the body, go from body to body. The reincarnation memories provide evidence for that, medical reports of out-of-body experiences. So when you put it all together, you see, yes, a human being is a combination of matter, mind, and consciousness or spirit. And then that leads to another idea, namely that we live in a multi-level cosmos where at each level you have beings adapted to the conditions at that level.
Different types?
Yes. We now find ourselves on the level of the cosmos that's dominated by gross matter.
Mm-hmm.
And we are living among other living things that are adapted to the conditions there. Beyond that, there is a level of the cosmos dominated by the subtle mental energies, inhabited by beings adapted to the conditions there. And down through history, people have had a lot of different names for these beings. They've called them astral beings, ghosts, spirits, gods, goddesses, things of that sort, angels. And I believe they really do exist. And then beyond that, there is a level of the cosmos dominated by pure consciousness or spirit, and it's inhabited by beings adapted to the conditions there. So what I'm proposing is that we begin our existence at that topmost level of the cosmos, but if we become attracted by the lower energies, we descend into them, we become covered by them, and that's what I mean by devolution, the process by which a pure conscious being descends into these lower levels of the cosmos, becomes covered by the lower energies of mind and matter. However, it is a process that can be reversed, and every great spiritual tradition of the world has some process of contemplation, yoga, prayer, meditation, something that will help restore consciousness to its original pure state.
What got you interested in all of this, Michael? Something must have got you to wake up a long time ago and say, I'm going to devote my career to this.
Well, yes. I mean, that happened to me back in the late 1960s. When I was in my early 20s, you know, I was a student at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C. It was a time of great troubles for this country. I remember seeing the Capitol burning after the assassination of Martin Luther King, the 82nd Airborne Division coming in to take over. And it was also the time of an anti-war movement, just like there's something like that. Now, it was a very, very, very difficult time, and I just decided I wanted to take myself out of the whole situation. I wanted to, because I'd heard, you know, I was hearing people on this side of the political question saying one thing, people on the other side of the political question saying another, and I just thought, I just want to see what I think myself. I want to find truth myself. So I decided, okay, I'm going to go search around the world, and I'm going to see what I can find that makes sense to me. So I began a little bit of a journey of self-discovery. It first took me to Iceland and then to Europe, and then I went to the Middle East. I spent some time in Israel. Then I went through some of the Middle Eastern countries like Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan. I made a pretty big search during that period, and I found what made sense to me was, you know, the ancient Sanskrit writings of India. I came in contact with the teachings of one of the gurus from India, Bhaktivedanta Swami,
mm-hmm.
who was one of the teachers of George Harrison, for example. And through him, I became interested in these historical questions. I began looking at these ancient Sanskrit writings, and I found, okay, they describe human civilizations that existed millions of years ago in the past, going right back to the very beginning of the history of life on Earth.
It is amazing.
And then I looked at something, it's not just in those ancient Sanskrit writings. I began to see, well, the same thing is in the Bible, it's in the Quran, it's in the Egyptian writings, the Romans, the Greeks, practically all the people who have ever existed on this planet, except for us today, have believed that humans have been around since the beginning, that, you know, we came ultimately from some spiritual level of reality, from some higher level of the cosmos. So I began to think, well, if what all these ancient wisdom traditions down through history have been saying is true, there should be some physical evidence to support it. So that's what got me looking into the history of archaeology, and that's when I began to find out, well, there is physical evidence to support this idea of extreme human antiquity. And then, of course, I also began researching the question, well, if we didn't come from matter, as we're now being told, where did we come from? Of course, one thing is, there are a lot of different ways to find out about these things. One thing is to actually engage in the spiritual disciplines themselves, because you can get knowledge that way. And that's what I did. I found something that worked for me. I found a system of meditation that worked for me. I've been practicing it for over 30 years. But some people, at first, the way the world is set up today, they're very reluctant, you know, to perhaps to take up something like that themselves. They want to know, what does science have to say about these questions? So for people like that, I decided, okay, well, let me see what science says about these questions. Let's see if science admits the existence of a subtle mind element that can act in ways that we can't explain by our current laws of physics. Of course, if you look in the current textbooks of physics, you're not going to find anything like that. But I decided, okay, well, let me look into the whole history of physics. I looked, for example, at Pierre and Marie Curie, who are very famous physicists. They were husband and wife. They lived at the early part of the 20th century.
Nobel Prize winners.
They got Nobel Prizes for discovering radium and doing all the early research on radioactivity and everything like that. They're mentioned in every physics textbook. What you don't find mentioned in the physics textbook is that they were heavily involved in psychical research.
Huh.
They were part of a group of 20 prominent European scientists who were doing this research in Paris early in the 20th century. And the group included 5 Nobel Prize winners, including the Curies, and they were doing experiments with mediums. Like they did 2 years of experiments with an Italian medium named Eusebio Palladino. And these experiments were not taking place in somebody's dark living room, which is the usual stereotype, you know.
Mm-hmm.
These experiments took place in scientific research institutions in Paris, like the Psychology Institute in Paris. And on one occasion, Marie Curie was controlling this woman's hands. Other scientists were holding her feet, completely controlling her. And in the middle of the laboratory room, Pierre Curie, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist, said a large table was floating in the middle of the air. He was timing how long it was floating in the air, measuring how high it was floating off the floor, about 3 feet. And, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. After 2 years of experiments, the whole group of scientists signed documents saying these things are absolutely true. Pierre Curie wrote letters to his prominent physicist friends saying these things are absolutely true. We have to take them into account, you know, if we're going to have a complete picture of reality. But you're never going to see that mentioned in your high school physics textbook, in your college physics textbook. And you know, this kind of research is going on even today. You know, Robert John, who was head of the engineering department at Princeton University, started doing experiments with random number generators.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the random number generator is a machine, a computer-like machine that will generate an output of zeros and ones.
That's right.
He found students would sit in front of these machines. He would ask them to get them to produce more ones than zeros. They were actually able to do it by their mental intention.
Take this back. Michael, stay with us. An hour is gone. We'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com.